You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Coco, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. And what an action-packed show we have today, Miss Ellen.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we archive the shows there under the On Demand button. We are here each and every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then, of course, we share all of the shows on our social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com.
That's right. And this is our second show for 2025. Yes. And we have pretty much signed on to be here for another year. Which is really cool. 15 years of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Who would believe that, right?
Right.
When we started,
in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
We writing stuff on a napkin.
Yeah. We were all like 10, 15 pounds lighter when we started. We had no gray hair. We had so much stuff to talk about. And that's what makes our show, one of the most liked shows here in Brevard. Because our show is fun. It's unscripted. It's educational. And quite informative, and we really do our best to give out valuable information to our listeners, our sponsors, or anyone that wants to listen. And so today's no different, right?
Yes.
We've got our friend Zach Marchetti is here, and he is the director of the philanthropic services for the East Coast Zoological Foundation. In other words, he's the money guy.
That's right.
He's a guy that if you have $1 million, $2 million, $5, $100,000, anything you have and you would like to donate it to the Brevard Zoo or the proposed aquarium that's coming, we'll take it. Right, Zach?
Absolutely.
So anyways, but our show here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we give people a chance. We give them a platform to come here and speak about whatever they want to talk about, whether it's a nonprofit, saving money, mortgage companies, banking industries, people want to talk about the environment. We want to talk about saving the animals. This is the show for you. Women's rights, whatever it is. And before we jump into Zach, I just want to tell our listeners that, you know, my son lives in Los Angeles, California. He lives in Hollywood Hills, and he had to evacuate. And we were getting videos, firsthand videos from Michael and his girlfriend, Samantha, about what was happening with the fires. And Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, all of us on the show, we feel pretty terrible about what happened. And we're sending our thoughts and prayers to all the people there and hoping that people can rebuild or whatever the good Lord has in store for them. It's just heartbreaking to watch the homes being destroyed and the animals. The horses, I don't know if anybody saw that video with the horses who were on fire and they were, you know, just running. And so I don't think it's fair for folks to single out the rich folks who had mansions and forget about the other people who lived there, because there were people living there just like you and I who worked in industries and maybe the movie industries, restaurants, the zoos, whatever, that they had smaller homes and apartments too.
Right.
And they are human beings. They're American citizens. And I think all of us have to pay attention to our climate, how we contribute to climate change, and pay attention.
Yeah.
You know? So on our show today, Zach Marchetti is here, and he's going to chat with us in a little bit. Our second segment is with an author of a book called The Butterfly Diary. Her name is Mara Nicholas, and she'll be calling in the second part of the show. So, Zach, take it away and tell us all about being a zookeeper, an educator, a spokesperson for the philanthropic part of the zoo, and how we can help spread the word about all the good things you're doing at the Brevard Zoo.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here. And, you know, there's always so much going on with Brevard Zoo. I've been at Brevard Zoo for almost 6 years now, and even just in that time frame, the growth and change and new things that I've seen come in have been extraordinary. And that's not unique to us. This area has grown so much in 6 years and is continuing to grow. And that's one of the things that I find really exciting, is that there are so many people that know the story of Brevard Zoo. Brevard Zoo has such a unique story. We are just wrapping up celebrating our 30th year. The ribbon was cut in spring of 1994, so this year was our 30th anniversary.
You mean I'm that old?
Right.
I was just going to say.
30 years.
That 94 was not that far away, was it?
It is shocking when you do
and
the math, isn't it?
It was such a tiny little zoo back then.
Yeah.
It was, but with such a unique and special story. The fact that it was brought about by community members who wanted to see that space that would be preserved for nature, for conservation, for connecting people with wildlife, and then just brought so many people together. Even at that time when this area was much smaller, 16,000 people physically put their hands on that project and volunteered to build Brevard Zoo, which is such an amazing story. But we know that for everybody that was here and part of that process and knows that story because they lived that story, there are still more people that have moved in since that don't know that story and don't know Brevard Zoo. You know, the number of people that I meet that tell me, oh, yeah, I've lived here for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, you know, primarily these folks that have moved in since the pandemic that say, you know, yeah, I keep hearing about the zoo, but I've never been there. And I just... What do you mean you haven't been there?
Yeah.
You got to come.
It's a community zoo. Yeah. It was voted one of the best zoos in the United States as well.
Absolutely.
And to think we have it right here in Brevard. And it's such a tourist attraction for Central Florida, for the state of Florida.
Yeah.
Right? People near and far, they hear about a zoo. Once you attend the zoo, you attend an event or anything to do with the children for Halloween or Jazzu, Safari, and it says, you get hooked.
You do.
You fall in love with the zoo.
There is something really special about it. And I like to say, you know, the Brevard Zoo is much more than the sum of its parts. When you look at the acreage, when you look at the number of species we have under our care, or the number of animal habitats, and when you just kind of look by the numbers, there are some impressive elements to it. But when you actually come and see how that all gets added together, there is just something that's different about it. You know, we are small enough that you can very easily navigate the zoo, even with children or folks who might not be as quick moving around. But we are large enough that we have resources that some of the other smaller physical zoos don't necessarily have.
And it's not intimidating at all.
Right.
And you're not overwhelmed when you go to the zoo, because you're right. You can do the entire zoo in a few hours.
Right.
Right. And you know what I like about the zoo too? The parking. I mean, we have a lot of parking now. I mean, before we just had the small parking lot. And now look at the acreage over there for parking and extension.
Yeah, we've grown the sort of the capacity of the zoo quite a bit as the community has grown and as we've grown. But even with that, we still run out of space sometimes, those really busy times during the year. And that's growing past your own sort of boundaries almost is a pretty neat problem to have. Mm-hmm. Our conservation team is so large that the majority of them don't actually work at the zoo anymore. The whole Restore Our Shores program, which is the program that we started to really focus on habitat restoration within the Indian River Lagoon, that team in really about 10 years has grown so large that they now don't fit at the zoo. We have separate office and warehouse and workshop space for them, because just that program has exploded. And that is such a cool thing to see.
Right. And is it true that this past year, 2024, I mean, post-COVID, was the most attended year for attendees to attend the zoo?
Yes. So I don't have official numbers yet. We're still kind of, we're in sort of end of 2024 wrap up right now. But it was our busiest year ever. And we are continuing to look at ways that we can increase that. We're constantly trying new things. Every time you look on the website, when you look at upcoming events and programs, there's new things on there all the time. And our conservation learning department, which is our education team, they have added new programs in the past year and are adding new ones this year that not only help connect kids with the work that's going on, but adults too. This past year was the first year that we offered adult summer camp at Brevard Zoo. It was a smashing success.
Adult summer camp?
Adult summer camp.
So I didn't hear about it.
Well, it was small, and we knew that people were going to be excited, so we didn't scream about it too loud, but it was a success. They're expanding on that. They're adding adult programs.
I think I'm going to sign up next year. I'll sign up today. And you guys also extended the boardwalk and the Africa expedition as well.
Yes.
So tell our listening audience, Zach Marchetti, a little bit about that on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people don't know that you can still extend.
Yeah. And so the zoo is, the zoo is our heart. It's who we are. There's a lot of talk, a lot of focus within the community, and we'll talk more about it later, is about the aquarium. But it's really important to make sure people understand the zoo isn't being left behind in any way, shape, or form. We are still investing in Brevard Zoo. And a big recent project was the renovation and expansion of our Expedition Africa area. We know that we have limited acreage for the zoo. We can't just keep spreading out and out and out and out. So what we do is we take the areas that we have and say, how can we make them better? How can we make them better for our animals? How can we make them better for our guests? And so when we had the opportunity to do so, we renovated all of Expedition Africa, and that includes the new over 15,000 square foot lion habitat, which is home to our three beautiful male lions. But it also includes a extension of the boardwalk so that finally our Expedition Africa area is designed as a loop the way the rest of our portions of the zoo are. Our zoo is laid out, we call it biogeographically. So it's laid out by where the animals come from. So we don't have big cat keepers or bird keepers or primate keepers. We have rainforest keepers and Africa keepers. So our zookeepers work with animals based on really where they come from. And Expedition Africa was the only one of those that didn't have a really nice loop structure where you just kind of go in one direction, it spits you right back out. So we've added to that. So for anybody who's familiar with the zoo, when you would come to Africa before, you'd work your way up, you'd go past the meerkats and the tortoises and some of the smaller hoofstock, and then you'd end up at the giraffe feeding platform, which is such an incredible experience, because when you get to that height, not only are you looking out over the big veldt, which is that big mixed species area where the giraffe live, but all of a sudden you also realize how high you've climbed, because you're looking right in the eyes of a giraffe in front of you.
And you feel accomplished because you knew you already did that part of the zoo. You're like, I'm on this end now. You're like, okay, kids, let's relax up here now. You're right. And there's a cool breeze too.
It's a really neat kind of view when you
but
get up there.
But you've added on a lot of new animals as well.
We have.
Every time the Florida Today, well, whatever's left of Florida Today, you'll see the Brevard Zoo added on kangaroo feeding, different animals and things like that. Where do you get the animals from?
So the animals come to us typically from other zoos that are part of the AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And when we are working on conservation breeding programs for endangered species, we are typically working in collaboration with all of those other zoos. You have almost 240 zoos and aquariums within the AZA. And it is a collaborative approach towards breeding for these endangered species and threatened species that looks at the genetic history of each individual, what the long-term viability of that population is, to create long-term, robust, genetically stable assurance populations for these species. So most of our animals are coming from other zoos as part of that process. But we do get animals other ways too. We have animals that come to us as part of confiscation. So this past year, we brought in two baby spider monkeys that were confiscated within Florida. They were being kept without the appropriate permitting and things. These were two very, very young spider monkeys. We assume they are likely brother and sister because it was male and female, you know, similar age when they were confiscated, but we don't know their full history. We can't say that for sure. And we worked on integrating them into our troop of spider monkeys, and they are now fully active members of that troop. So some of our animals come to us as confiscations like that, but most of our animals come to us from other zoos as part of really strategic plans for the long-term survival of those species.
And, you know, I think it's good for listeners to know as well that when you think about a zoo, most people only think about the animals. But there's so much more going on at the Brevard Zoo here in Brevard County, Florida, with conservation, with the Restore Shores program, the grasshopper sparrows. I mean, I was looking at it, and I'm like, I haven't seen a grasshopper in so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the grasshopper sparrows, I'm glad you brought those up, are really neat birds that almost nobody has ever heard of. You know, these are the most critically endangered songbird in North America, one of the most critically endangered birds in all of North America. Mm. A number of years ago, a bunch of researchers went out and surveyed the couple of pockets of prairie in Central Florida where they can still be found, and estimated that there were probably only about 100 of them left in the wild, maybe as much as 200. And we have been working with that species for a couple of years now with a couple of other zoo partners, as well as Fish and Wildlife. And this year was our biggest breeding year since starting to work with them. And we hatched, or I mean, the birds under our care hatched. I didn't sit on any nests personally, but under our purview, more than 80 chicks were hatched. And almost all of those have been returned.
Are these all in the bird sanctuary?
So these are all actually, these are behind the scenes. So the breeding programs, when we are looking, so there's kind of two different types of breeding programs we have. One is with the animals where we're working with other zoos, and it's things like lions and giraffe, and we're maintaining these long-term stable populations, and these animals will, you know, they've lived in zoos their whole life, and they will likely live in zoos their whole life, but, you know, under the absolute best care we can give them. Animals like the grasshopper sparrows, this is actually a reintroduction program where we are breeding them and then we are getting them back out into that prairie as quickly as we possibly can. And we have in the last 3 years, we've released well over 100 fledglings back out into that habitat. But because these are tiny little brown birds that really don't like a lot of interruption and people, you know, bothering them, they're tiny, they get nervous really easily.
They sound like my husband. Like, they want to stay home and hibernate.
Yes. Yeah. So
they don't want to be bothered.
Yeah, they live behind the scenes, but we've done a lot.
They eat, sleep, and mate.
The name actually comes from
and breed.
That is what they do. The name actually comes from their call, which is this really kind of high-pitched kind of trill call, which sounds similar to grasshoppers when they're vibrating their legs and their wings and making that call.
Yeah.
They do eat a lot of bugs, and you know, they will eat some grasshoppers. but it's actually because of their call. But fascinating little birds, and one that are a really neat success story that comes back to kind of the relationship between the zoo and the community, because this is a species that we knew there was a need to help with, and we got a call to really kind of support this breeding program. But we didn't have the space to do it. So like we've done so many times, we turn back to the community and say, okay, here's this project. We think it's an important one. Does the community think that it's important? And the community resoundingly said yes, because coming out of COVID, when everybody's finances were still in a lot of question, really, the community put together over $100,000 to build a breeding facility for this little brown bird most people have never heard of. And zoo guests are never really going to get to see. We have video footage and we have signs and all that because we want to connect people with the impact of our work. But to see the community support a project like that is pretty special.
We're very blessed in Brevard, actually. People do love supporting many nonprofits, and they also have been there for the zoo from the start. Right. And we see it in, you know, our friends, people that talk to us about when they attend events at the zoo, whatever. And I think it's wonderful that the people come together so well. You look at the bricks at the zoo, and you could tell, you see your names of so many of your friends there. And you're like, this was from the beginning, right? But in addition to that, we have 14 acres of land in Cape Canaveral and over $100 million pledged for the Bowen Aquarium. And I know that our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, many people tune into the show, but there has to be new listeners that have heard nothing about the aquarium and how it's going to partner up with you guys at the zoo and have this wonderful tourist attraction for Brevard and also bring in a lot of revenue. So talk to us a little bit about the plans that had to change for the aquarium, why they had to change it, where it's going to be located, and what's in store for us.
Yeah, so really, to be able to talk about the aquarium, we take a tiny little step back and just sort of acknowledge that everybody knows, or you know, the people who know us as Brevard Zoo. That's who we've been for 30 years. But what is unique about us as an organization is that we are one of very, very few zoos and aquariums in the country that are part of the AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, that are truly independent nonprofits. We are not Brevard County Zoo. We don't get reoccurring operating dollars from county
or state.
City or state,
yes, right,
government to support our operations, which is really rare. You go down to Zoo Miami, about half their employees are county employees, all their zookeepers, all their horticulture team, you know, they're, but we are not. We are a little different. And so part of our model is that we have to be really entrepreneurial, and we've been that way with Brevard Zoo, but we've been looking for a number of years at building a second campus that will completely focus on our local waterways and sharing what makes this area so special and teaching what are truly universal stories about water care using our local examples as the connection points for guests. And so that is, you know, in its most boiled down element, what we are planning on building with this new aquarium. We launched our fundraising campaign, which is called Our Legacy Campaign, in fall of 2021. So we're just over 3 years into what we launched as a five-year campaign. It's a $100 million campaign that is raising money to continue to support the zoo, but also to raise the capital to build this new aquarium and conservation hub. We have over $86 million pledged towards that original $100 million goal. And we are moving forward with all of our plans right now. The original plans and many of the folks that we talked to, you know, especially earlier in the campaign, had a timeline for breaking ground this past fall, so fall of 2024. We've worked with the port and with all of the parties involved to extend that timeline because we have needed to accommodate for some of the changes that we've made to that program and to the design plan. When we launched and officially announced this program originally, manatees were not part of the scope of the project at all. And that's because at that time, manatees were still doing pretty well in this area.
They were thriving.
They were.
Yeah.
And then we lost about 2,000 manatees over the course of 2 years. And we heard very loud and clear from this community that, hey, if you want us to support this aquarium and conservation center, you need to have something with manatees there. So we reorganized, we redrew designs, and have added a complete manatee
and
rehab
injured
center.
Sea turtles as well.
Sea turtle rehab is something we've been doing for a long time,
right,
and something we do very well, but we are adding to with the new aquarium. We will have
second ICU
location. Yes.
You'll have a critical care area.
Absolutely. For manatees, for sea turtles, absolutely.
Right. And what I like too is a lot of the focus is also going to be on the Indian River Lagoon.
Right. And that is such an important focus for us because we live in an incredibly special area. And for especially for folks who have moved here, you know, in the last 10 years, if you don't know what these waterways used to look like, you have no reason to really understand why we want to be working them to get them to get back that way. These waterways, this is one of the most biodiverse estuaries in all of North America. We have thousands of species of plants and animal that call this area home. And it is one of the reasons that I live here. It's one of the reasons that I think a lot of people live here. And having this facility means that not only will we have this just spotlight shining on all of the examples of why this area is so special and what we can do to protect it, but also teaching again everybody who's visiting from other areas. You know, this new aquarium is right across the street from one of the busiest passenger cruise ports in the world. And whether you are visiting from Melbourne, Florida or Melbourne, Australia, we want you to come have a really fun and amazing experience, but then leave with these things that you can do at home, no matter where you are visiting from, to help protect the waterways in your
right
area.
And I like that the name is named after the people who put their money where their mouth is. Yeah. And they absolutely have always loved the zoo, the Bowen family.
Yep.
So talk to our listeners a little bit about when the state decided not to help fund, this family said, wait a second, we're not going to let that go. And they jump right in to add more money. So it's only fitting that we name it after them.
Yeah. So we announced the official name Bowen Aquarium at the end of last year. And it's named after Pat and John Bowen, who they came to us when there was $1 million in state funding that was proposed that would have really kicked off the design process and launched this aquarium project, as we were calling it at the time. And that didn't go through. They read that in the newspaper and basically showed up at the zoo and said, we think that's a shame. We want to help. And that's a pretty incredible opportunity and situation to be on the other end of. And their support has only grown since then. And we went through a lot of different sort of exercises to figure out what we wanted to call this, because they didn't ask for the naming opportunity. You know, many times you lay out a big capital project and you say, okay, to name this building, it'll cost, you know, $3 million or this building. There was none of that being talked about. Yeah. And when we first started talking about naming it after them, they were actually a little hesitant. Those are the people you want to name something
right.
like this
and
after.
And the thing is, you know,
right?
A lot of people talk about leaving a good footprint behind on the earth, right?
Yeah.
These people actually live it.
They are. We call this our legacy campaign because this is the opportunity to leave a legacy that is based on hope and on collaboration for the future. And that is what we want our legacy to be. And John and Pat would say the same thing about themselves.
So we have about 3 minutes to go. And I know there are many upcoming things that they do, like the murals that you guys are going to have in February.
Yes.
Talk quickly
for anybody
about
who
that.
Saw the Bold Boards exhibit 2 years ago, where we collected surfboards from the local surf community. And then we paid local artists to put their rendition of sort of what wild Florida looks like to them on those boards. And we had them on display in the zoo. We're doing a similar project again. This is called Bold Murals. We have 14 artists that we've selected that will be part of the first round. And then we will be doing another round shifting later this year, where we'll bring in 14 new artists with a new sort of prompt for their art. And this is part of our mission of helping wildlife and people thrive. This is where we start to draw in that human element and support
and the young people,
the art projects.
That's
right.
And
absolutely.
You also have the 3K coming up, organized by the Running Zone.
Yes, and that is in its 19th year, which
I
is amazing to believe. So this one's called the Okapi Clip Clop.
I like okapis.
Okapis are fantastic. We got our first okapi last year.
Oh.
George the Okapi, he's
George.
Amazing. So this is in partnership with the Running Zone Foundation. We do it every year. It is always a fantastic event that then helps raise money for the zoo to support all of the things that we do.
And then my favorite was the Wetlands Day, which is also on February 2nd. They're doing kayaking that particular day.
There's something for everybody at the zoo. So give our listeners the website for the zoo if people want to go and make a donation to come to the zoo or volunteer to be part of the zoo. Or find out more about the package opportunities that they're going to have later on for the aquarium and the zoo and all that.
Absolutely. So the zoo website is brevardzoo.org. And then you can also either navigate from, there's a link on the landing page at Brevard Zoo, or ourlegacycampaign.org is the website for the current fundraising campaign and is also the home of everything for Bowen Aquarium at this point, which will, once we break ground later this year, looking at this summer for groundbreaking, will transition into a full website that is focused really primarily on just the aquarium. But right now it's that ourlegacycampaign.org is where you can find all the information on donating to support our current fundraising campaign for the aquarium and the zoo. And brevardzoo.org will get you to all of the upcoming events, the volunteer opportunities, because there are always volunteer opportunities. We wouldn't exist without our volunteers, like many nonprofits. We have about 600 active volunteers at Brevard Zoo, which for a zoo our size is unbelievable and really just reinforces that community connection that the zoo has been benefiting from the day we opened.
Do you know, like, off the top of your head, how many animals are in the zoo?
So we have between 800 and 900 animals at Brevard Zoo. You know, we are constantly having baby lorikeets and baby cockatiels and you know, smaller fish and things. So that the exact number, I'm not going to tell you off the top of my head. I'm not even going to try.
And here's one. People,
over 800.
People always ask me, can you bring snacks to the zoo?
So you can bring snacks for yourself to the zoo. Please do not bring snacks for our animals at the zoo.
Yeah, especially
because
the giraffes.
They
yeah.
have very specific diets that we work with nutritionists in our veterinary department. We have two culinary professionals that, you know, along with a host of their support staff and volunteers that manage our commissary that prepares all the diets for our animals. So it's done very specific. If you want to feed animals at the zoo, please come look at the website, look at the schedule.
Yeah, pay
because
attention.
We have amazing feeding opportunities.
And you know what? Before, I want to get this in really quick too. At the Brevard, so you have the lodge where people can actually book that lodge for events. I heard somebody said that they can get married at the Brevard Zoo.
Yes, yeah. They can. Yeah, not only just we have our lodge, which is our indoor event space, but we also have event space throughout the zoo as well. And so we have had we've had weddings, we've had celebrations of life, we have corporate events, we have private events. There are, you know, you can book different parts of the zoo for different types of experiences.
And think about what you're doing. You're actually helping the community in the zoo when you do that, right?
100%.
And how long does it take to tour from one end of the zoo to the other? Do you know offhand?
How long it takes to tour the whole zoo? You know, we say, you know, you should give yourself a couple of hours minimum. And if you give yourself a couple hours, you're going to be able to see most of what it offers. If you are doing a tour with me, because that's a big part of my job, is doing tours with, you know, newer folks and connecting new people with our mission and who we do. It's going to take us all day if we want to try and see the zoo, because there is nothing I like better than spending time in the zoo and talking with people about what makes it
right.
so special.
And it's,
you can easily spend a whole
it's
day.
It's really good that you all partner up as well with Brevard Schools to have, well, now we heard about the adult coming in for their day camp. And you have the children coming in as well. And I think that's the way, I mean, everything in life comes down to education and opportunities, mm-hmm. right? And the Brevard Zoo does that 100%.
Absolutely. Our zoo school and zoo camp and the different programs, the Lagoon Quest program that works with getting fourth graders and actually getting their feet wet in the Indian River Lagoon, teaching them about this waterway. And we have participants in that program that are coming from, you know, coming from Cocoa, coming from these other areas that live, you know, less than a mile from the Indian River Lagoon, but in fourth grade during that program, for many of them, that is the first time they actually
set foot in
that water and learn about it. And so to be that link to our local environment is such an important thing and such a piece of pride for us. We wish that every person had the same connection to the wildlife that many of us do.
Zach Marchetti, my goodness, what a great segment. Before you go off air, give us a website one more time, because I'm sure there's people out there with no children, or maybe they don't like their children. They have a life insurance policy, or they have a big fat 401k, and they're like, you know what? I want to do something like the Bowen family. Yeah. Maybe I'll just leave this certificate to the Brevard Zoo.
Absolutely, because we are a 501c nonprofit. You can everything you know that's donated to us is tax deductible, and goes back to helping our impact. And you can find out more information on brevardzoo.org and ourlegacycampaign.org, which is the website for the actual fundraising campaign.
You know, we'll if every Brevard resident decides to just send $10 to the Brevard Zoo, we would make all that money that we need to get that aquarium.
100%?
Not even 10, 5. You could do 5, 10, 20, whatever. But if everybody says, I'll just stop by the zoo and hand them a little $20 bill or check. That would be so good. Or just donate on PayPal. You guys have a great site to donate online.
Yes, it's easy to donate online. You can do it all right through the website. But then you can also reach out to somebody within the philanthropy department if you are interested in naming opportunities or those larger gifts or something specific. We always have people that are excited about helping connect you with the impact and where how best to make it meaningful for you as supporters.
Well, and I remember that when, because I was part of the Marcus Foundation up in Atlanta, so I remember what the aquarium did for up there as well. So, Zach, thank you so much for all of that knowledge. We're going to take a quick minute and listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Mari Nichols
Nicholas.
Right after these messages.
Yeah. Good. That was great.
9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at Cloud9, that's Cloud number 9, furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great segment we had with our first guest. Zach Marchetti was here speaking with us about all the happenings at the Brevard Zoo and the new proposed $100 million aquarium that's coming to our area. Our second segment today is with author Mary Nicholas, and she is calling in to speak about her book that's called The Butterfly Diary. You can tune into our show on the radio on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and online everywhere as well. And Mary's on the phone, so that's Ellen, right, will just throw out there.
Real quick, 1510, WWBC, just hit that listen live button, and you'll get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we archive all the shows, and you'll see that on all of our social media and website.
Yes, and Mary is going to be talking about her book, The Butterfly Diary. And boy, talk about exploring your inner self and connecting with yourself, what she calls a spirit animal. I will let her talk to us a little bit about herself and what happened after her divorce. And she did fly like a butterfly.
All right.
So go for it, Mary. Talk to us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you started. What made you become an author, and then you decided to write this book that actually speaks to a lot of us older women over 50, like myself.
Yes, and like myself.
Yes.
I was always interested in writing. I was in a gifted children's program when I was 11 years old. Had a wonderful creative writing teacher, and she said, I had a natural voice. And so over the years, you know, I tried to write a couple novels and really didn't feel inspired, and they weren't very good. They're sitting in my drawer still. And I was married for 24 years. And when I filed for divorce and had to restart my life, and I was shocked what a difference it made. I was married for 24 years, like I said, what a difference it made 24 years later to be out in the world being a postmenopausal woman dating and having to confront these new, you know, acronyms. Like I was like, you know, looking for sapiosexual woman or looking for FWB relationship or, you know, 420 friendly, which I figured that one out, but it was just different world. And I was feeling very, and I think a lot of women commonly feel insecure after they leave a long-term relationship like that. You start questioning your identity.
Well, and you have a lot of self-esteem issues too, because you ask yourself, why me? And what have I done? You know, where did I go wrong? And so, yeah, you do have to have like a spiritual journey with yourself. And you found the way to help yourself was writing this book.
Yes. So I was single. I filed for a divorce and was finalized in 2012. And then I was single for 6 years. I was kind of searching because I was very fortunate to have a spiritual mentor, my minister, who kept telling me, well, you know, you've been this married person for 24 years, but who are you really? Who are you? You know, and I was like, wow, just knocked me for a loop because I was like, well, I didn't realize how much I identified or defined myself through my marriage. Both my ex-husband and I had unstable childhoods, and we, you know, we met up, and I think we, you know, formed a trauma bond where we're both abandoned by our parents, and we tried to make a family, just the two of us, and tried to have a child and so forth. It didn't pan out, which, you know, was luckily a good thing. But that question, and it's, all of us have that question, who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose in life? So I really went down that road for 6 years, and I found that I had a connection to the Hawaiian Islands. I saved up my very first trip when I was 18. I saved up money to go to Hawaii. I don't know why Hawaii, but I just felt this connection. And then I didn't come back for 35 years. I got married to my first husband, and he was more of an armchair traveler. And then when I filed for divorce, I said, well, you know, I'm free. I can travel. I can go back to Hawaii. So that's what I did.
Well, it sounds like it's a transformation for you. And, you know, it's very courageous and it's an inspiring story. It motivates a lot of people. But talk to me a little bit about dating at midlife. It was pretty challenging for you. I would think intense because it was a whole new world for you.
Yeah, the rules had changed drastically. I remember when you're dating in your 20s, you're having fun and it's not so serious. And then you feel a little insecure and desperate when you're in your 50s and dating. And now everyone's, you know, they have aging parents, they have children, they have, you know, work challenges, and then it's more complicated. And the thing that took me by surprise was, you know, well-meaning friends would say, well, you know, there's not a lot of good men out there after 50, and you know, you have to lower your expectations. And I was like, what is this? Why do I have to lower my expectations?
Well, I'm going to let Allie jump in here. Allie sits with us on Mondays. She's a good friend of Ellen's, and she's what we call a resident guest forever. And she's shaking her head. I think you hit a nerve there when you said about the dating.
Oh, dear. My first marriage was in my early 20s, and it was much, much later before I started dating again. And you are right spot on there. I'm telling you, Maria, you know, it is a totally different thing, and your priorities are different, and it's not just flirty time. It's really getting to know the inner person more.
Well, you don't have time to waste, right? So when you go on these dating sites or these apps or wherever you're meeting these people, you have to be pretty blunt and tell people what you're looking for, because time is not our friend.
That's right
when
up
we
front.
Hit 50 and 60, time is not our friend.
No.
We have limited time. So in your book, your main character, Nolani had everything she dreamed of. She had a successful husband, restaurant, she was a housewife, interesting friends. And then after 20 years, that's it. Everything's gone with the husband and the inheritance money. So what character did you pattern her after? Was there someone in your life or someone you knew that had that exact circumstances in their life?
So it's loosely based on my divorce and restarting and then going down this path. In fact, a lot of people who have read the book are like, is this based on your life? They were surprised. And I'm like, well, yeah, because I was a midlife person getting divorced, and I had to restart my life, and I returned to Hawaii because I wanted to, you know, find out why I was attracted to that area in the first place, and then I dropped the ball, and then I came back, and it was better that I came back more mature, because as you were both commenting, time is of the essence after 50 and after 55. I'm 65, and you realize, okay, I got to start crossing things off my bucket list. And I was fortunate, a very good friend of mine was telling me about this local indigenous healer, wisdom keeper, who was conducting some workshops about spirituality. And I thought, well, that's what I kind of want to know about myself and my, and what is life, you know, what is life, what's the meaning of life and all that. And so I studied with him for 3.5 months and learned more about the Hawaiian culture. And one exercise he had us do in a workshop was to imagine your spirit animal and what it would say to you. And, you know, I saw a butterfly, and I was like, well, I don't know what a butterfly means to me. And so I was working with him in the interpretation. He says, well, you know, post-divorce, aren't you reinventing yourself? You're kind of blooming. So, like, he kind of went through the unpleasant phase of being a caterpillar and going into the cocoon and being emulsified and emerging as this, you know, magnificent winged being. And I was like, wow, that's pretty intense.
Well, divorce will do that to you, right? Because you said that despite the challenges of dating online, and of course our station, we know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we're very responsible on our station. That's why we're on air for 15 years. But you said that the novel is based loosely on your divorce. And it took you 6 years to find the current husband that you have, but your husband and your friends were quite shocked at how sexual the main character is. And now that we know it's loosely based on your life, your friends are probably going, girl, what's going on with you? You know?
Oh, I know.
Spill the tea.
You just soaring like an eagle, girl. Go for it.
Well, I have to say right now, it's not true that older women aren't sexy and desirable by men.
Yeah, I'm going to clap to that one. I'm glad you touched on that in the book, because there's a perception out there that when you hit 50 or 60, that, you know, that sexually a woman is like, oh, no, you're a grandma, you know, you're going to have to take care of kids, you know, there's nothing left for you. And that's so untrue.
Yeah, it's like, and then they call us crones. I mean, yeah. Crone, that's not very sexy.
Crone, C-R-O-N-E.
I never
heard of that. What is it?
A crone, C-R-O-N-E. In the mythology, it's the aged woman that... And they're always like, they're wise women, but they're, really haggard looking. And I'm like, no. I mean, it's like this whole thing around menopause, too. I remember growing up and people would whisper about, oh, you know, that woman, she's going through menopause. She's going to go crazy. And I remember being really scared as a kid thinking, I never want to get old. I don't want to go through menopause.
Yeah. And your main character, Nolani, she realized that a lot of the Western culture, the middle-aged woman, they weren't supposed to express their sexuality, their womanhood, who they are. And your character said, oh, no, I'm not going to be following that kind of a normal. I'm going to do what makes me happy, because spiritually this is how I feel.
Exactly. And, you know, we do get a lot of wisdom, and I'll touch upon what you said earlier, is that after 55, you're like, you know yourself enough, what you're willing to put up with. Like, this time when I was dating, and I told my husband, it took him by surprise, I said, I don't have a lot of time to waste. I'm looking for a long-term relationship. If you're just looking for a hookup, you need to move on. And he was so shocked. I was so blunt about it. He said, I never met a woman that was so upfront like that. And he said it was actually a turn-on.
Well, good.
Well, you know what it is. Well, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, right, with time. In your, you know, in your 20s, you're raising your children, you're soaring. In your 30s, you got the big house, you got money in the bank, you're working, car insurance, health insurance. In your 40s, your kids are going off to college. In your 50s, yeah, it's an empty nest. By the time you hit the 60s and you know 70s is coming, two-thirds of your life is technically gone. So now what do you do with the other one-third that's left? And I think we become self-centered and we become people that say, wait a minute, this is my time. I'm finding my purpose for my trips, my friends, you know, who you love, whatever it is. And your book actually teaches all of us that this is what you do.
Self-discovery happens at every age.
Right.
You know, you refind yourself as a different person sometimes, because you don't you don't connect anymore with the person that you were when
you were
married.
And your characters, I notice in your book, are based on your real-life friends and acquaintances and people you had actually met that you saw the transformation as well, and you incorporated them in the book. So talk to us a little bit about these friends that you didn't say their names, but they are in your book.
Yes. So the female friends, they're all based on real life women in their 50s and 60s. Her bestie, Kailani, is my real life bestie, and she's also of Hawaiian descent. And she is very, when I met her, we just hit it off. We're one of those, it was one of those friendships that you just clicked the moment you met. And she's just fun loving and smart and brave, and like she inspired me to speak up for myself. Like, she's very assertive, and she's not afraid of saying what's on her mind. And I was like, wow, I need to be around more women like that, that, you know, speak their mind and they're not going to apologize who they are. Because one of the biggest surprises in my life post-divorce was how much of a people pleaser I was. And I was raised in a traditional Asian household. And I observed my mother being subservient to my father. Like, she would eat after everyone else ate, and she would kind of obey him. And I thought I was aware of that programming enough that I wouldn't fall into that trap. But I did that in my marriage. I always, you know, acquiesced to my ex-husband, and, you know, I'd say, oh, what do you want to do? And I never thought of myself, you know. Like, what do I want? And so that 6 years before I met my second husband was really growing up and saying, what do I want? What makes me happy? What kind of people, friendships do I want? Yeah. I think it's common when you get divorced after so long, people that you thought were friends, all of a sudden they're not your friends. Most of my friends took my ex-husband's
side
in the divorce. Yeah.
So
I was really shocked.
So for listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with the author Mary Nicholas, and she wrote a book called The Butterfly Diary, which is a really good book about self-discovery and finding herself after divorce, and also finding love and noticing how difficult and challenging it was to date and get up to speed with the people who were saying, hey, you're over 50, you can't find anybody. They're all looking for younger women. And she found that to be so untrue because she put herself out there. So now your book, Hawaii is a magical place. And it makes me feel like it nurtures everybody's spirit when you go there. And your book is set on the Big Island where that novel is based. Talk to us about why did you pick the Big Island for the setting of the novel?
So the Big Island is still pretty wild and rustic, and a lot of mystical things happen there. Like, I've had experiences where I was like, did that just really happen? You know, a lot of the locals still believe in Minahunis, the magical elves that live in the island, and spirits that roam around, like the volcano, Madame Pele. She, people revere her, you know, when she erupts, they always say, oh, there goes Pele. She's, you know, upset again. And there's all these really fascinating myths, like Pele, she really respects her residents. And she supposedly sends her white dog to warn people that she's about to erupt. And people have talked about seeing the white dog and knowing, oh, the volcano's about to erupt. Or another myth is about the Walking Dead. There's myths about warriors from the ancient past who march along at night. And I didn't experienced it, but talking to locals, they said they've experienced that. So there's a lot of spiritual, magical things happening on the Big Island.
Yeah. And so, Mary, you worked as an executive assistant for like 30 years in the financial sector in downtown San Francisco. And you always wanted to write. And you wrote two books before, right? But what do you think about this book that made it the one that you said, this is the one I am going to focus on because this one is doing quite well?
Yes, I've gotten really positive reviews, which I'm very thankful for. I think it was just, I was living in Hawaii the whole time I was writing it. and I was standing with my wisdom keeper, my indigenous wisdom keeper. And so I was just really immersed myself in the culture, and I just felt really inspired because this my wisdom keeper mentor, he like knew a lot of ancient, his family's lived in Hawaii for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And he comes from, you know how they talk about indigenous wisdom keepers? They share, they don't
It
write
sounds like my
down.
Grandmother. All... This wisdom keeper sounds like my grandma, my grandpa, my aunt, yeah. My cousins. Because, you know, I'm Indian, you know, like my originated from India. And there was a saying when we were little that the older people, they become wiser, bolder in their old age. And they could share their experiences. And they also take their experiences and help you as they're leaving the planet. They give you their wisdom. So these healers sound a little bit like my old relatives.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And I think we miss a little of that because we don't connect with our older generations.
They put them in a home, yeah. A nursing home or
yep.
whatever,
you know.
You don't
get to hear the stories or any of those things that really kind of are healing.
Right.
Because Nani Raj, man, she's got some stuff that, like, could make you –
make
don't,
or break.
Don't put your hat where your hand
can't reach.
Can't
reach it, yeah. So I also read where you also like yoga. You like anything where you could. It's a retreat, and so in 2018 the energy was intense. Were you there in 2018 at a yoga retreat site?
Actually, that's very astute of you. I was. I was on the Big Island during a yoga retreat site, and I was there during the winter solstice, and I was in a cabin in the middle of the jungle. I can't believe I did that, but and I remember at one point I got in the middle of the night because there was so much light coming through my windows. I thought, did I oversleep and miss my yoga class? Is it daytime already? And I walked out into the jungle, and the moonlight was so intense, it illuminated the whole jungle, and I couldn't believe it. I just was shocked how bright it was.
Yeah, I think the universe is calling you to later on write a book about local healing too, because you've noticed that with the local healers, they were able to diagnose illnesses, describe people's ailments, and they also taught you and encouraged you how to use energy to heal people that you came across too. I mean, how beautiful is that? It's like life in a nutshell.
Yes, I also studied with an older wisdom keeper. He practiced a form of Reiki that he described as Hawaiian Reiki. And I actually met him because this is one of those weird universe things where I had frozen shoulder for a year. And I was seeing doctors and a physical therapy every week. And my shoulder would not move. I couldn't lift my arm. It was my left arm. I couldn't lift it above my head. And I was just sitting there going, God, this is taking forever. And I just happened to look down at my computer, and my page was open to Yelp. And this pop-up ad said, Hawaiian healer available. And I went, what? So I just thought, I can't lose. I have nothing to lose. I called him and I explained what was going on. He goes, oh, yeah, I can heal it over
okay.
the phone.
So just,
minutes.
You know what? Our segment is coming to an end. Gosh, I wish we could talk to you more. Just give us the website where we can get your book or where we can find you.
You can find me on Facebook, Mary Nicholas, author. And I really appreciate you spending time with me this morning, Sita.
Thank you.
It was awesome. And we'll make sure we put it on all of our blogs and how to get your book. And continue that journey, sister. Make it as great as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Thanks again, everybody, for turning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here on 1510 WWBC. We'll be here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks for tuning in and downloading. See you soon.